Hello and welcome to Best Comics Ever, presented by Comic Book Herald. I'm your host, Dave Busing, founder and editor-in-chief of comicbookherald.com. And as Thanos says in Infinity War number 1, I've already had my taste of omnipotence and found it impossible to keep down. Welcome to part 1 of the Best Comics Ever deep dive into the Marvel Universe villain Thanos in the original Infinity Saga. He's the star of Avengers Infinity War and easily one of, if not the, most compelling Marvel villains we've seen on screen. Thanos has always been a personal favorite Marvel character of mine since first reading Infinity Gauntlet, and believe it or not, the complete Thanos reading order was the first individual character reading order I ever wrote for comicbookherald.com. Throughout Best Comics Ever, we'll go deep on topics of conversation around the pick for story of the month with a focus on themes, impact, and innovation, and then in the final section, I'll be ranking the comic or comics on Comic Book Herald's list of the best comics ever. The list is currently upwards of 375 comics from Watchmen to Wanted and is stacked with recommended reads. If you want to check it out, just go to comicbookherald.com/thebestcomicsofalltime with a hyphen in the URL between each word in the best comics of all time. A quick note about possible spoilers. I will be talking about Thanos and comics that he has appeared in. If you are saving the events of this Marvel Universe character from comics he's been in the 70s or 90s, and you don't want anything to be spoiled, then I recommend you pause. Go check out the Thanos reading order on Comic Book Herald. You can find a link to the order in the show notes. And once you've read the comics, come on back here for some info. For the rest of you, let's carry on. So, how does Thanos get to Infinity? What are the origins of the Mad Titan? Although 1991's Infinity Gauntlet by Jim Starlin and George Perez remains the most well-known Thanos story and the primary influence on Avengers Infinity War in theaters, the character's origins actually run back nearly 20 years earlier in the pages of, firstly, an Iron Man comic, and more notably, Captain Marvel. If you're interested in reading the entirety of Thanos' appearance in the Marvel Universe, please check out Comic Book Herald's complete Thanos reading order on comicbookherald.com. Again, I'll include direct links to the most relevant related reading orders, including the Infinity Saga, in the show notes. In February 1973, during an issue of Iron Man, number 55 to be exact, creator Jim Starlin introduced the characters Drax the Destroyer, All of Titan, and Thanos. The first appearance of Thanos set up his role as the black sheep of Titan's royal family, although his ambitions proved rather quickly to extend beyond the all-too-familiar tales of planetary takeover. Jim Starlin moved from this one-off work on Iron Man to directing Captain Marvel, where from issues number 25 through number 34, readers get the first major Thanos story. It's a great early 70s Marvel cosmic story in which Thanos seeks the power of the cosmic cube to ascend to godhood, with only Captain Marvel and, of course, Rick Jones around to stop him. Well, that and the help of Drax the Destroyer in his first incarnation, solely focused on destroying Thanos. This early story is important because it sets a couple of elements in stone. Thanos is an enormous threat not just to his own planet, but to all of existence. It is a desire for cosmic power rivals really any villain we've seen in Marvel Comics up to this point. I've come to think of Dr. Doom as similar in terms of unwavering pursuit of power, but a lot of the examples I love, any version of Secret Wars, Emperor Doom for example, they actually come after this Thanos story. Nonetheless, there are certainly examples of Marvel villains attempting to ascend to godhood, from Red Skull's first short-lived use of the Cosmic Cube in Tales of Suspense, in a comic book issue I have framed on my office wall, to Doom's own attempts to usurp the Silver Surfer's power cosmic in Fantastic Four issues number 57 to number 60. One of the wild differences between Thanos and, say, Doom is that Thanos just straight up becomes God in his first real outing. It takes Doom a few tries to get there. Thanos comes in and instantly operates on this scale, eventually leading to a crossover war with the Avengers spanning Captain Marvel number 32, Avengers number 125, and Captain Marvel number 33. This three-issue section of the story's finale set up another recurring theme with Thanos. As Captain Marvel says, "Apparently Thanos hasn't quite gotten used to being a god yet," he says to Iron Man. "What fun is there in becoming god if there is no one to watch?" This is Thanos' downfall time and time again. He spares his enemies so he can boast and feel the achievement of winning. Not dissimilar from Doom on occasion in that they're among the few villains who can quote-unquote win, but through both narrative constructions and their own hubris, it never seems to last. We do also get the great Thanos attitude toward Earth in this section, when he sends a fleet of warships to attack Earth, basically as a big in-your-face to Captain Marvel. After the Avengers do manage to stop his hordes of alien invaders, Thanos gloats, "Of course, fool, who could believe I would sacrifice an entire fleet as part of my master plan? Whether the Avengers won or lost, their mere involvement with my space pawns has doomed planet Earth." He's a little more familiar kind of super friend style caricature of a villain at this point. Nonetheless, his schemes with the cube are undone when Captain Marvel karate chops the cube out of power. Hooray, comics! But the setup is clear. Thanos aspires to ultimate power, and using cosmic weaponry, in this case the cube, he will get there. Thanos would return in 1975 in the pages of Starlin's run on Adam Warlock, in a story that would ultimately conclude in Avengers number 7 and Marvel 2-in-1 Annual number 2 in 1977. To my mind, the Warlock stories feature the most important development for Thanos, as the warring cosmic villain begins displaying more of his defining pragmatism and master strategy. Thanos lurks in the shadows, releasing Gamora as his spy to infiltrate Warlock's inner circle, until the threat of Adam Warlock's evil alter ego, the Magus, becomes too dangerous to leave unchecked. Thanos then convinces Warlock and company to work with him in an effort to prevent the Magus from obtaining ultimate power. Ever the deceiver, Warlock's willingness to work with Thanos backfires. Here's a quote from Thanos. "For now, nothing can halt my ultimate plan for total stellar genocide. Soon all who must suffer through that which is called life shall be granted the peace that not only passing the great divide can bring. Yes, I shall grant them this tranquility, for am I not Thanos? Am I not the dark side? Am I not death?" And he says this all to Warlock after he defeats the Magus. Given his direct call-out to the dark side, this seems like as good a time as any to address one popular criticism of Thanos that takes little more than looking at him to make the assertion. Yes, he's influenced by Jack Kirby's early 70s DC New Gods, including the Lord of Apocalypse Darkseid. Here's a quote from creator Jim Starlin to CBR.com on these similarities. "Kirby had done the New Gods, which I thought was terrific. He was over at DC at the time. I came up with some things that were inspired by that. You'd think that Thanos was inspired by Darkseid, but that was not the case when I showed up. In my first Thanos drawings, if he looked like anybody, it was Metron. I had all these different gods and things I wanted to do, which became Thanos and the Titans. Roy took one look at the guy in the Metron-like chair and said, 'Beef him up. If you're going to steal one of the new gods, at least rip off Darkseid, the really good one.'" For all intents and purposes, this seems to be true. Thanos certainly acts more like a Metron mixed in with elements of Darkseid as he progresses through time, and he does float around in a really cool chair for the much of his Marvel Comics appearances. So it's not necessarily a direct Darkseid ripoff, but certainly those elements, and again, Kirby's New Gods, are a huge influence on what Starlin was doing throughout his work on the character. For all intents and purposes, at this point in time, Thanos, and again, at this point in time, meaning throughout the early 1970s, or the mid-1970s, Thanos is the ultimate nihilist. He just wants to destroy and kill. As Adam Warlock tells the Avengers, "Yes, he plans on blowing every star out of the heavens." Amazingly, too, this story essentially captures an Infinity Gauntlet prelude in brief, as Thanos actually collects 6 soul gems. That's right, he collects the gems before we ever get within the decade of the Infinity Gauntlet. There's basically a Thanos quest in a single page as Warlock recaps how Thanos got them. This is truly incredible to me as I was rereading the Warlock War that Starlin had plotted out Thanos quest and Infinity Gauntlet in 1976, essentially. And again, the Gauntlet would be released in 1991. So these ideas and the manifestation of this cosmic event was germinating in these pages 15 years before it ever became, again, one of the biggest Marvel stories of all time. Thanos has an air of humanity and pragmatism, but here, in this Warlock War, we see the monster. After the Magus is killed, he kills Gamora, he being Thanos, and leaves her for Warlock to find, then destroys Pip's mind and does the same for Warlock to discover. Thanos is blowing up the sun of our solar system before Captain Marvel crashes into his computer systems to stop his mad schemes, again, hellbent on destruction without reason. The story comes to an end in Marvel 2-in-1 as Spider-Man, of all people, saves the day. Warlock is released from his soul gem to freeze Thanos in place. This is the iconic arms out in a raised position that makes my damaged shoulders cry to this day every time I see the image. It's also the image that we get Thanos frozen in decades later in Jonathan Hickman and Jim Chung's 2013 Marvel event, Infinity. And this is where Thanos would remain frozen in defeat for 11 years until his reappearance in the pages of Silver Surfer. There's a reason Infinity Gauntlet is able to reach such instant stakes, and it's because Thanos does all the legwork of collecting the Infinity Gems throughout the rebirth of Thanos and Thanos Quest, alongside the preceding issues of Silver Surfer, also by Jim Starlin and Ron Lim, which delivered the rebirth of Thanos and elucidated his plans to restore universal balance through interstellar euthanasia. Thanos Quest number 1 and number 2 fully flesh out the Mad Titan for a 90s cosmic audience. Mistress Death has tasked the Mad Titan with the death of half the universe, and the Infinity Well has granted him the knowledge of tools to help him achieve this goal. I have to admit, after rereading these issues in the wake of Avengers Infinity War, I was astounded how much of Thanos' grand scheme in the film is lifted straight from the pages of Silver Surfer and the Rebirth of Thanos. In particular, Silver Surfer number 35 very clearly lays out the Mad Titan's plans and rationale in a way that actually makes the MCU entry make a bit more sense. While Avengers Infinity War spends a good deal of time, no spoilers here, I promise, focusing on Thanos' efforts to collect the Infinity Stones, Thanos Quest tells a similar adventure with so much more variety of the Marvel cosmic hierarchy. Thanos comes face to face with elders of the universe like Champion, the Collector, the Gardener, the Runner, and ultimately the Grandmaster, not to mention the poor in-betweener. The strategic brilliance of Thanos is on full display as he outwits the Champion in battle, turns the Runner and Collector against each other for two gems, and turns a virtual reality fight to the death into a death trap for the Grandmaster. We also get to heartily enjoy Thanos as a character in these pages. He's pragmatic, he's strategic, but he's also sometimes sassy. He mocks Champion with disdainful humor. He's a great trash talker, as it turns out, as he says to Champion in the middle of their battle, "I really expected more of a challenge from you. Can you hear me underneath all that rubble?" Straight out of Thanos Quest, we launch to the most popular of the bunch of events, Infinity Gauntlet. From Come and Get Me to Snap, few Marvel cosmic events are as iconic or defining as Jim Starlin and George Perez's work on Infinity Gauntlet. After acquiring the completed set of Infinity Gems in Thanos Quest, the Mad Titan gets right to work snapping out half of all life in the universe in the very first issue of the event. His Lady Death remains forever unimpressed by his displays of torturous, cruel affection. Nebula gets it the worst, but the heroes of Earth feel the weight of his power in full. In an instant, the Marvel Universe loses the Fantastic Four and many additional heroes, including Daredevil, while out in the streets of New York City, friends turn towards vanished friends and mothers turn towards harrowingly empty strollers. Thanos would go on to develop more nuanced philosophy, certainly, but in Infinity Gauntlet, he's at his absolute most manically nihilistic, forcing the orbit of planets to spell his name in what Mephisto, the devil himself, labels depraved creativity. This is a power-hungry, mentally unstable villain who declares in issue number 1, "None shall deny me my righteous place in the pantheon of cosmic gods. I claim a seat at the head of the table." There's little doubt that the revived Warlock, Gamora, and Pip the Troll will lead the remaining heroes of Earth to some sort of resolution that restores the deceased, but the impact of Thanos' destruction is fully felt regardless. Forget saving the planet. The stakes are half of all life itself, anywhere it may exist. This is so much of why I think Infinity Gauntlet has had such a lasting legacy. Again, much like we've discussed in our review of other Thanos-related material, Thanos wins. And he wins in dramatic fashion, taking out half of all life in the universe. Is it undone? Of course, but we rarely see the heroes this out of their element, effectively dealing with loss. Which brings us now, as we round out the Infinity Saga, to the next summer's event, 1992's summer sequel, Infinity War. Now forever known as the title of Avengers 3, Infinity War, the comic book event, will go down as a forever underrated sequel to the Infinity Gauntlet. Admittedly, fans of the MCU version of the story turning to Infinity War number 1 for similarities are in for a seriously wild ride. For all intents and purposes, Infinity War, the comic book event, picks up where Avengers Infinity War ends. Thanos is living his best retirement out on the farm when the Magus, Adam Warlock's evil half, returns with the full might of 5 cosmic cubes and an army of Earth hero doppelgangers. Infinity War delivers deliciously enjoyable team-ups like Thanos working with Warlock in the Infinity Watch, including his daughter Gamora, Nemesis Drax the Destroyer, and Dr. Doom and Kang the Conqueror scouring the edges of the war in their own pursuit of power while silently vowing to murder the other the entire time. Not to mention the fact that Galactus recruits Doctor Strange in his own efforts to prevent the Magus from universal domination and destruction. As a whole, the event is uneven and descends into writer Jim Starlin's penchant for swollen philosophizing, but there aren't too many books that rival the scope on display or the sheer comic book enjoyment that I get, certainly, reading The Infinity War. Which brings us finally to the descending order of sort of excellence, Infinity Crusade, the third act in the trilogy. It'll always remain the unsatisfying, largely overlooked conclusion to the early 90s saga, but Infinity Crusade has some compelling ideas. Much like he did with the Universal Church of Truth in the mid-1970s, writer Jim Starlin continues to skewer religious dogma in a direct way few superhero comics before or since have even approached. And much like we saw in the preceding Infinity War, it's largely up to Thanos and Adam Warlock working together again to prevent disaster on a cosmic scale. Infinity Crusade is admittedly a bit of a jump the shark moment for Starlin and company as the goddess, Adam Warlock's good half, acquires 30 cosmic containment units from a dozen different realities to form what she calls, seemingly expecting it to sound much cooler than it actually does, the Cosmic Egg. Unfortunately, after the cosmic landscape-altering action of Infinity Gauntlet and the zany team-ups between the likes of Kang and Doctor Doom in Infinity War, the Crusade is a bit of a letdown. Starlin is doing familiar work on themes around absolute certainty, religion, and power structures, but Adam Warlock's good half, aka the goddess, just isn't all that compelling of an evil entity. Likewise, so many of the Marvel heroes are mind-wiped into doing the bidding of the goddess, the event becomes a frustrating meditation on what it would look like if a bunch of your favorite Marvel Universe friends suddenly very much got religion. As a standalone, Infinity Crusade is passable, but it does work better when read as a part of the complete original Infinity Saga. And now that we've talked about the Infinity Saga in full, you have a great sense, hopefully, of Thanos, his origins, what makes him popular, what makes him tick, and what happened in the Infinity Saga. Again, I would recommend you check out comicbookherald.com for full reading orders, or check the show notes to dive into these comics yourself. And next week, we will be here to talk about how these Infinity events rank compared to other Marvel cosmic events throughout Marvel history. Best Comics Ever is written and produced by myself, Dave Busing. You can find more of my writing, again, at comicbookherald.com, where you can also find a complete collection of Best Comics Ever episodes. If you like Best Comics Ever and Comic Book Herald, you can also find more of the site, including comic book panels influencing each podcast, at Comic Book Herald on Twitter, Instagram, or at facebook.com/comicbookherald. If you like the podcast, please subscribe and leave a review sharing why you enjoy it. If you don't, please find the nearest phone booth, shout your negative review into the receiver, and wait for a response. Music for Best Comics Ever is by Anthony Weiss. You can find more of his music at anthonyweiss.com. Best Comics Ever is made possible by listener support on Patreon. You can learn more about supporting the work and receiving Comic Book Herald and Best Comics Ever exclusive content at patreon.com/comicbookherald. Thanks for listening, and as always, enjoy the comics.